or part of the Sushin. For me anyway, it starts to feel like lots of sails or sheets on a line. So many different things going on. especially as we start meeting one-on-one, it's there's a kind of harmony to it, but many different directions of people's observations, concerns, their heart direction. I was kind of intrigued by particularly Zach and Baj's interest in doing things right. and I started reading into this book, which is actually a very excellent book. I don't know, I think it may have come out recently. It's called The Noble Eightfold Path, translated by Bhikkhu Bodhi. And it's amazing because as I started to read into it, and it's talks about the Four Noble Truths in general, but specifically the Eightfold Path portion of it goes in depth. And it's foundational. And what struck me at first is that it's it made me tired because there's so much information, kind of so much detail, attention to a specific aspect of mind, and it even refers to more that aren't directly in the book, because a lot of time was spent in those many people and gathering and discussing one particular aspect of breath or states of mind that come up. And yet there's also this same higher level parallel level in the information that's revealed, this enlightened mind aspect that is not mundane about it. It constantly points towards that. But I also feel that this form of Sushin has that in it, and it we were saying the other day, or I proposed, that Zen practice is like being catapulted out into some unknown place without any instruction. That this format actually embodies, it has embodied in it the essential information. And when I first moved to Taos, there was a man there collecting seeds, and he was collecting indigenous seeds. He even, through his sincerity, got some of the blue corn from the Hopi that had been kept in this room for 100 years, literally, and they opened it and gave him some of that. And what was interesting in his project is that I don't remember if we grew any, but he was passing seeds around because he wanted the next generation of seed, because in his view, the seed has gone around the globe. And so encoded in it was this information, and within one generation it could adapt to whatever climate it was in. And this conversation came up at Hokoji as we were discussing sesshin rolls, temple rolls. I've been encouraging people to like really step up into these roles with mixed results. And so there's this image you've heard of, Indra's net, which is like a particular model of the universe, like a holographic model, and at the intersection of each knot is a jewel. And each of these reflect all the others. And within each one is contained the entire source information. And I see these temple rolls are like that, where there's superficial aspects, you know, to say being the Doan and keeping time and chanting. But there's a whole nother layer down deeper, and each of these roles are like that, where they contain the whole aspect is contained within it. And they each connect with the other role, the other other positions. So from your settled in or deeper position, you see the other people enacting their roles, and it's quite powerful. And within that, beyond just getting the job done, making the organization of some event like this happen, is the several things, but one of them is just the overarching purpose of doing this at all, which is, again, has lots of reasons, but to, you know, compassionately fulfill this way of being together. And this in part is that term I used yesterday about the energetic imprint of this information that's passed down, you know, this model. It's like it's an overlay of a way of being, and encourage everyone to at some time try all the different jobs that you have the capacity for, and to see how deep you can enter into that role. And as a community, you know, it makes this mind-to-mind connection, like those jewels on the net. Yeah, and there's you know, within each, there's this trisection of the three Buddha bodies passing through each role as well. So there's like an ultimate aspect, more functional and then the extremely just practical. And, you know, I'm not here enough to know. I know that some of you are doing this. I'm not being critical in any way at all. And I'm more speaking to the idea that there is some foundational quality missing in our practice in light of our sort of experience of being thrown out into the dark and not knowing what the hell we're doing, that kind of feeling. And I'm saying that there is this model, this way of gathering that actually imparts a tremendous amount of information. And there's a kind of harmony that comes out of it that I find when leaving the walls of this place, well, you never leave the walls. The temple walls just expand out and everything is included in it. So my chatterbox companion on the airplane and so on is all one of the people within our temple. The other thing is that we've been talking about with Hongzhi's poem is that the to not, it goes to how to actually be in the moment, to not construing reality for oneself. As Dogen said, how to practice not thinking, non-thinking. Because it's the other thing that this type of retreat does is creates a container to allow that to happen. Because it's a little bit scary sometimes to completely stop creating the next moment. But what's beautiful about that is that what's revealed is something that is vast and infinite. And that's what Hongzhi is talking about, just ceasing your ceasing and moving freely in this infinite, vast vastness, I guess you could say. Another way of cycling back up to the like roles is that the down at Houston I went and talked about building and Zen practice. That's part of a series of talks that some people were doing down there. And it was really interesting to formulate that as a builder and a Buddhist. Both of them, been doing them both about the same amount of time. And I realized, or was able to articulate the how well, there's a lot of stuff to this particular subject, but one of the thing is that it's it's about the relationships and the responsibility that we have to to what we're doing. So in the case of building, it's not so much about building the house. It's more about how it's done. And the project itself is an illusion of, and you know, on the part of the unaware, it's just a kind of graspy, needy, I want to build, I want this, I want that. That's usually a big piece of it. But within that, there's a kind of, for us, we have the awareness to know that even as we're doing these, building these things, that what we're building isn't just the tangible product. It's the interplay between people and what we impart energetically, the repercussion of what we impart. Okay. Anybody have anything they want to add? Please.
Follow very closely the last four lines.
I'll get somebody's
Nature said, non-mind, maxim fulfills the way of non-mind. But in terms of the fulfilling the roles of the temple roles and looking at these sentences, does that seriously mean that we should go about our temple roles with non-thinking?
Well, there's a practical side to enacting your role, but yeah, you for a while there at Hokoji, Donna accused me of doing everything, and I said, "Well, I just see it needs to be done, and I go and do it. I'm not thinking like, oh, well, I'm going to get her to do that, you know." So there's an element of that, but I think it's not. So there's a meditative quality, or this zazen mind to it, this kind of empty, spacious aspect. But there's also awareness and luminosity to it as well. Saying those words reminds me, Tuku Urgen Rinpoche, he called this present emptiness, and be in accord, in harmony with the underlying way things are. What's interesting is that, you know, the last conversation Coben and I had was him urgently telling me to get my plans together to build a new zendo at Hokoji. So how do you plop that into the midst of this? Because he was, you know, like driven to get this done. In fact, it was shortly after that conversation, I think I was talking to Giroux about it on the ride from the airport, so I'm sorry to repeat myself, but the the work leader is called Shusui, or Shisui in Japanese, and he was telling me all this about building this new zendo, and I thought, yeah, well, that's cool. And then he says, it's a very important role. And I was like, yeah, what is it, you know? He said, it's called Shusui. And I was like, God damn it. I've been the Shusui for 25 years, you know? I'm tired of it. So I, a few months later, came across some reading about temple roles by Dogen and the six main officers of the temple, which I don't remember all of them, but it's the abbot, the tenzo, treasurer, Shusui, and two others I'm not thinking of. And if you read, I mean, he's written so much about the Tenzo. If you read into that and realize that it also applies to the other ones, it clicked. For me, I just with that little bit of information, I wish there was more. I wish there was more I could read about it. But it clicked the importance and depth of these roles and the caring and the vastness of the responsibility or the tenderness, tender heart towards the place, what you're trying to do. And carrying that empty quality at the same time. So it's kind of a dichotomy, of course. Mm-hmm. But I think what Hongzhi's saying is, you know, you enact this, you enact it, but you're not trapped by it, you're not hung up on it, caught by it. And those roles at the same time are like teachers. You learn from them. You offer yourself up, and it teaches you back. That's why I say this. There's something about this form that has wisdom in it already built in. Isn't apparent at first.
So that's what confused me a little. That in the roles that I've played formally or informally and learning to tend to the Sangha and the temple, I have found for myself, if I really put myself into the role and what's needed now, I feel instructed by the foundational or the ancestors. And what trips me up sometimes, though, is when I read what the role should be and how it was done 300 years ago. Oftentimes trips me up. So I'm back to, I was a little confused when you said that. Maybe I heard it wrong. I didn't get it so much that our practice was not or unfoundational. We were missing some foundation, and I feel like you're saying that sitting and living together like this. If I put myself wholeheartedly into it, it feels like the foundation does come up through the sitting or the living. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't contradictory to what you've said.
I don't think so.
So, what seed are we then? Was Kogan the kernel in the cave for 100 years, or was that you, or... Are we the second seed adjusting to this environment?
No, I think it's 3,000-year-old seed. And even beyond Shakyamuni Buddha, I mean, there's inherent wisdom in human beings and other creatures living together. Who knows? But relative to the elements of that concern Buddhists, I think it's in here. All those key phrases appear.
It's interesting that that we're talking about the seed, because while sitting, and, you know, the mind can just go, but so here I go. But this is a tree line, and right above me, and you're just kind of sitting here. And just somehow I just saw being a seed. Mm. What makes how does a seed of an oak tree know it's an oak tree, or of a plant know it's a certain plant? And I was thinking about how that's so harmonious with original nature, and almost like we're in this constant state of recreating. And it's almost a gift that we have, that I have here in this time, to come home and to feel and to grow and become this thing. So this is kind of my spin on the seed. Me being the seed. And then as far as the work hour lecture, just kidding, but I do get that too. It's interesting. I got up this morning and I just didn't want to get up. I figured, well, I'll just rest and then start at 9. and then
where's the Eno?
And then it was cold. It was cold, and I didn't want to be in the cold. But I also was aware that all of these things do kind of support you. We sit and I'm staring at the wall, and then I get to get away, not away, but I get to do something that's my body is in motion, and I'm giving and I'm interacting, so it's interesting to see, you know, myself, you know, the practice in the practice, to see where I'm going, and how I'm doing things. It's interesting, because you sit and then you have to do something like work hour, and you really can see yourself clearly. It's nice to see how they all play a role and how it's good to participate, and just like sitting at the wall or going to the gym or doing something, if I can just do it, that there's a gift there, that I'll get something in return. I mean, is that the question would be, is that kind of what you're, here in the temple, whatever.
Certainly what you are.
Yeah.
Every sitting period, and then we'll talk about it. It's funny, when I was looking down the line of our yogis and I saw a big bird and I remembered that. Now you have a white blanket, but I remember when you had that big yellow blanket.
I'm looking for that blanket.
I said, now I just came back from the homeland of Honshu, and I'm so immensely grateful to everybody here for this practice, because it doesn't exist anymore in this homeland, or just very little, and whatever we do here, maybe one day we can bring it back there. And I very much hope so. Very, very much hope so. And as for the temple roles, I just recently gave a little talk on the instructions to the Tenzo, and it is funny. You're right, you're reading through it, and I tell you, well, you have to put a lid on the rice so no rats fall into the rice. Well, it made a lot of sense in the 1200s in China, believe me. It probably still makes sense nowadays. But the deeper meaning of all the roles, and especially what he tells the Tenzo what to do, and not the vast heart, the motherly heart, and the kind heart, it is wonderful once you integrate these thoughts of his Dogen's teachings on it into your practice. And I mainly experienced it through being Tenzo, but I've also had some other roles, which I probably didn't do as well as being Tenzo, but there's a lot a lot we can integrate into our practice, and I think we have to keep it in mind and just see how it works for us.
I'm trying to understand the connectedness of all the different jobs. I know that when I'm doing Han, that when I'm mindful of it, I'm paying attention to the clock and to the beats and so forth, then it helps everybody to be here on time and to prepare to be here, and getting that done right assists with everybody and harmoniously flowing on to the next thing and to the next thing. I'm not quite sure that I when I'm doing that I'm actually seeing how it's connected to everything else, or having a deeper sense of it. And it's a feeling, that emptiness of it, I guess. I was wondering if you could say something to kind of point the direction of that.
Well, actually, I was talking about all the other roles, not the Han, doesn't
help.
But I'm sure that one counts.
Well, I don't know when you hear that. Where does the sound go?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it just reverberates out there. And you hear it for a while. Like when you hit the, I don't know what you call the big dong thing, but just that reverberation that continues on and on and on and on.
That's part of it. I don't quite have the words. You might ask, why do we have a place such as this at all? Whatever that answer is, all these play a part in it.
Remembering that Cliff invited people to sign up for helping in the kitchen, and people weren't signing up right away. And then Donna Lynn was making her wonderful speech about Donna, and people inviting people to give. And I thought it was really a beautiful connection between these roles and the fundamentals of Buddhist practice. And I can hear myself saying to someone who's starting to practice, who wants to know the fundamentals, you know, the Eightfold Path and the Four Noble Truths and the this and the five this and the 10 precepts, and probably the first thing I would say would be, put yourself in service immediately. You want to learn the basics of Buddhist practice. Serve something. And I think this is what all of these roles have. Because you wonder why people aren't signing up. Why are we not playing Han and offering our Dana? There's something going on in this ego that we're holding. And even, I think, Buddha was reluctant to teach. He was just quite happy, kind of floating off. And Brahma, you know, his higher nature. They might not understand you, but you need to serve. You need to serve. And this is the compassion. So I think the very fact that you're serving binds everything together. And this is a place of service. These are the basics. This is about giving the self away. This is the basic practice. It's not about, you know, the four this and the five that, at least my sense of it. That all flows out of this. Put yourself in service. Give yourself away.
And you can feel that when I could feel, I can feel that when I'm taking the pencil to put my name down for something. It's like, I don't really want to.
The toilet appointment.
You know, or Jerome saying, you know, you're getting up at 4:30 in the morning to prepare for tea.
I don't want to do anything the first day. I'll start the second or third day, and then I'll decide for a bunch of things. Yeah, but now it's got to get here. It's okay. Just fill it up as much as I can.
There's a kind of resonance, you know, to speaking of the Han, interestingly enough, between these roles, and they seem like they're they are taking care of different pieces, but there's when there is a resonance. There's always a resonance. When there's a harmony, then the whole thing kind of sings along. The other thing is, there is no self and other ultimately in which we can play off of, and so you could ask yourself, who is doing the Han? And it's a good time to ask it with that repetitious funk and having to watch the clock, and it's like flushing out all the sleepy heads. Calling, it's a compassionate act. All of them are about compassion and engaging in, you know, people would come to some sessions and just sit because there's this sense of being diligent and, you know, I've got to really get this and, you know, be like the famous monk of the past who sat in the graveyard and achieved, you know, something. But the truth is, that's like the beginning person does that. And then the more experienced people spread out and nurture the whole thing. And it is the broadening of the practice of Zazen. Zazen is the deep, deep foundational root, but off of that you carry it. It expands outward. You don't sit and then you get up and go do your job. You never leave your seat. And this is, you know, we go round and round here, but then we all get in our cars and drive and fly away, and you still don't leave your seat. But you keep coming back to kind of pound away at it to reinforce it and to reconnect with this energy. This, I call it an energetic overlay. It's like a model. Or something, being inside a mandala or something like that, and it's fresh each time. I mean, it's shifting, moving, who's here, how many people. You know, we had a sesshin at Hokoji for Rohatsu, and of course I showed up and only one other person showed up for the first 2 days, and it was one of the singularly best sessions I've ever had in years. We didn't talk, we didn't chant, except the Heart Sutra in the morning we did, but we didn't do meal chants or anything. We didn't need to talk to each other. We both knew what to do, and we did it and sat and sat and sat. Jerry Halpern would have loved it. So the other thing is, these roles, the reason I say they have information embedded in them is that they expand and contract. You know, if we had 100 people, if you read in the Soto Shu, they just translated like monastic rules into English. Mm-hmm. And I was reading it in a little bit. Haven't had time to really spend much time with it, but man, it would take 6 people to light the incense in the morning, you know. So that's that kind of expanded role. I was talking to Jerome about Doan, that You know, there's, I learned from one of my friends, there's, the timekeeper has actually a title, and the person leading the chanting has a title, and sometimes the mukugyo and the gong are separate people, and, you know, you can keep unfolding it, or you can contract it to where only a couple people can do the whole thing. One person can do it.
I don't know how to say it exactly, but there's a hesitancy that I don't know these jobs. I don't know how to do it. And it really, when you said there were only two of us and we knew what to do, so we didn't need to talk, there's always a feeling of having to go ask someone. And first off, who do you ask? Secondly, you feel stupid, always constantly asking, well, what do I do next? What do I do next? You know? That is probably something that happens, does for me, beyond just a, no, I don't want to do that, you know?
Well, one of the beauties of what Koban imparted was that he didn't tell us very much. And therefore, you have to operate from your heart. And the wisdom is there. It's not like you can read it in the manual and it tells you what to do and there's the secret. The secret's here. And when you start to just engage with the role with your heart, the wisdom's there. It's not written down or anything. It's there energetically. It's there. So you just walk into it and it comes back at you.
Thank you, Barbara. I really liked what you said about the, you know, that the Buddhist practice is throw yourself in service, like that's what it is. I remember one time when I was living here, the first time that I experienced really practicing enlightenment in a working situation. I had gotten up from Zazen and I went to go change my laundry, and someone else's laundry was in the dryer, and I took it out, and naturally, the next thing I knew, like within a few minutes, their clothes were folded neatly on the table. And I hadn't given it a second thought. It wasn't, these aren't my clothes, I'm not going to fold them. You know, it was just, it was like, it, that was natural, you know? And I think that's kind of the no-thinking part, like what Cliff had asked, you know, does that mean that even when we're practicing our duties, no-thinking? There had to be some thought, that kind of like practical discernment in folding the clothes and setting, you know, that kind of mind working had to be present to get the job done. But the mind of the self, like Barbara was talking about, the ego was gone, you know, so the clothes got folded very naturally. And I think for me that's actually more of what I was trying to speak to yesterday, probably more skillfully than not, but that the importance is in the foundation of practice is knowing that, not getting confused and that just by doing the tenzo or being the shika or being the ino or all those things is practicing enlightenment. But it has to be the zazen mind, you know, it has to be that empty mind. Otherwise, you know, I think we can find ourselves, and I find myself doing the job, but then the ego's involved and, you know, there's all this judgment and critical, you know, views on everyone else and myself. And then I also see the value in what Barbara's talking about is throwing yourself into service. That's a great value, I think, just because then you do get to see the ego. You know, it's going to come up. So for me, it's seeing, you know, where judgment or where that kind of critical mind comes up towards myself or others, and then it gives me something to work with. It's like, that's my barometer, you know. Do I get up and just fold the laundry with no self? Or Do I get up and all of a sudden, who left their laundry? Neither again? This is Doug's socks. She does it every time. You know, but Doug's not here, so.
He's probably wondering, where are my socks?
Right. Yeah.
Scott's blanket.
Yeah, Scott's blanket. So I guess, you know, to me that's really important is, for my own practice, is to not get twisted and to really be aware of where is my mind at? You know, when I'm doing whatever I'm doing, where is my mind at? And like what you said yesterday, I really love that as a practice, is if I find that my mind, say if I'm cooking and, you know, I'm, you know, feeling some tension about getting it done and feeling pressure and putting off on others or whatever the situation is, or feeling like I'm such hot stuff for cooking such a good meal, you know, really kind of addressing, like, kind of sensing that, like where my mind is seeing that activity, and then asking, well, who is puffed up about cooking this good meal, or who is upset about feeling pressure from others, you know? But I love this topic because it's so, like, you know, immediate in our life, you know, moment to moment.
Yeah, definitely. Barbara and I were talking about this earlier, that there's, as she was talking about the service side, because it really goes to the question of why have a place like this. And the other is that in Taos, how important it is to so many people to know that it's there, even if they don't come, aren't able to quite, you know, be here. That it is here is important. Also, which I have gotten that feedback in Taos, so I'm sure the same applies here too. It's good to know, because sometimes it seems kind of fruitless, you know. But it's like the Zen master who described this practice as, particularly the Bodhisattva practice of trying to fill a well with snow, you know.